This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Genesis. And now here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Genesis, chapters 42 through 45.
I purchased some Christian videos the other day, and they came with a bumper sticker inside the package. I'm not sure that you can read it, but I'll read it for you. It says, "Love wins. Love wins." I'll bet Joseph had a similar bumper sticker plastered on the bumper of his chariot. For 13 years, Joseph had been used and abused and rejected and refused, first by his brothers, then by the Egyptians. Nothing in his life went right. Every promotion was followed by a setback. Every appointment ended in a disappointment. Joseph could have become angry. He might have become bitter. He would have given up. But you see, love wins. And Joseph loved his father back in Canaan. He even loved his brothers who had treated him dirty. He loved the Egyptians around him, most of all. Joseph loved God. And in tonight's chapters, when those brothers wind up on Joseph's doorstep, though you might think he should have sought revenge and gotten even, instead, Joseph shows love. As Paul wrote to the Corinthians, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. To steal Joseph's life down to a bumper sticker, and there you got it right there. Love wins. The rest of Joseph's story dwells on how he treats his brothers when they're reunited. And amazingly so, it forms a picture of how Jesus will treat his brothers, the Jews, in the last days. Well, chapter 42 begins with one of the 13 famines mentioned in the Bible. You know, a few of us have experienced a true famine. The crops wither in the soaring heat. The winds howl and blow through the fields. They lift off the topsoil. It swirls around. The dust settles back to earth as a powder on fence posts and over houses. Empty rain clouds hover overhead and release a drop or two, just sort of teasing, not easing the problem. Once fertile fields turn into a dust bowl, nothing grows. There's nothing to eat. And this was the situation in which Jacob found himself. Famine had hit the land of Canaan. Verse 1 tells us, when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" Now that's a really comical line. You might not catch it at first. The family's on the verge of starvation when they hear there's grain in Egypt. And Jacob says to his dumb sons, "Why are you standing around here looking at each other? Somebody needs to go down to Egypt." And he said, "Indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die." So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "Lest some calamity befall him." Apparently, Jacob was still mourning the loss of his son, Joseph, and he probably held the older boys responsible, and he's not going to trust them with Rachel's other son, Benjamin. Verse 5, "And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him, with their faces to the earth." What a moment that must have been. Who would have thunk it? When Judah handed that bratty little brother, Joseph, over to those slave traders and pocketed the 20 shekels, there is no way Joseph could have ever imagined that one day those same brothers would be standing there bowing down before him in desperate need. And yet that's what God had seen from the very beginning, wasn't it? That was the prophecy. That was the dream that Joseph had had. You remember that dream? That was the one that had enraged his brothers. their bundles of wheat bow down to Joseph's bundle of wheat. Now the dream they'd all scoffed at and mocked at and resented is being fulfilled by God's providence. Verse 7, Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. Now I picture Joseph sitting up on his throne in this long, ornate Egyptian hall. He's interviewing entourages from all over the world. When he notices some familiar faces in the line, he sort of squints. He's about 40 years old now. His eyes are getting a little dim. And so he just kind of squints out there and he says, boy, those guys look familiar. And then it hits him. There's Reuben. There's Issachar. Those are my brothers. Imagine Joseph's emotions at that moment. It amazes me that he could hold himself back. But apparently he makes a split-second decision to play this out a bit before he reveals his identity. Perhaps the Holy Spirit spoke to him and sort of restrained him. He gulps hard. He musters a grim look on his face, and he speaks in a way that disguises his voice. Then he said to them, "Where do you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." So Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. Remember, by now, Joseph is nearly 40 years old. He's sporting an Egyptian haircut, no doubt. He's wearing Egyptian clothes. He's speaking the Egyptian language. Besides, the last time his brothers saw him, his coat of many colors actually fit. Now he's got that middle-aged bulge, I'm sure. And besides all that, they thought Joseph was dead. Never in their wildest dreams did they expect to see Joseph again. Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land." And they said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all one man's sons. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies." But he said to them, "No, but you have come to see the nakedness of the land." And they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And in fact, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more." And how Joseph was not able to stop them right there and dwell on that thought for a moment or two, I don't know. If I had been him, I would have probed into that a little bit. Well, what happened to this other brother? Tell me about that, please. What he's going to do is he's going to put his brothers through a few tests to determine if they're truly sorry, if they're truly repentant over the way they treated him before he reveals to them his identity. But Joseph said to them, "It is as I spoke to you, saying, you are spies." Now remember, there is a species of prophecy in the Bible known as typology. We talked about this before. Oftentimes, God will use Old Testament people and stories to cast light and give insight on New Testament truths. And the life of Joseph is a vivid example. Joseph's life is a type of the life of Jesus. And how Joseph treats his brothers after their rejection of him forms a pattern, really, of how Jesus will treat the Jews in the last days when he returns. There are basically three phases to Joseph's dealings with his brothers. Here, he relies on mystery. Later, he will reveal his majesty. Finally, he will provide them with ministry. At this point, Joseph is relying on mystery. He knows them, but they don't know him. And there are also three phases in how Jesus will deal with Israel in the last days, his brothers who have rejected him. When Jesus returns at his second coming, he will come in all majesty. Afterwards, he will minister to the Jews throughout the kingdom age. His ministry will take place. But at the moment, even today, he is relying on mystery. You see, the Jews don't recognize their brother. Paul Harvey says that providence is God acting anonymously. And this is how Jesus is working among Israel today. He is acting anonymously. There is mystery. The brothers don't recognize the favored son, but the day of revelation is about to come. Verse 15. "In this manner you shall be tested. by the life of Pharaoh, you shall not leave this place unless your younger brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother, and you shall be kept in prison that your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. So he put them all together in prison 3 days. Of the 12 brothers, remember, Joseph and Benjamin were the only sons of Rachel. They were full brothers, whereas the other brothers were Joseph's half-brothers, the same father but different mothers. And when Joseph was shipped off, Benjamin was just a toddler. Now he wants to make sure he gets to see him again. And so he says, you know, you've got to go back. You've got to bring Benjamin. Then Joseph said to them the third day, do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house. But you go and carry grain for the famine of your houses, and bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die. And they did so. Joseph is going to teach them a lesson on substitution. One brother will remain until the younger is retrieved. And this is what the Jews failed to understand about Jesus, that he came as their substitute, that he came to die in their place, to suffer their penalty. What the Jews today need is a lesson on substitution. Verse 21, then they said to one another, we are truly guilty concerning our brother, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we would not hear. Therefore his distress has come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not speak? There's always somebody that's got to say, I told you so. Did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. In other words, their consciences were still guilty. 20 years later, they're still feeling the pain, the guilt of what they've done. They remembered what they did to Joseph, that his squeals, that his screams fell on deaf ears. And Reuben tells them, man, this is payback. But they did not know that Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter, and he turned himself away from them and wept. Their interpretation of the situation moved Joseph's heart. Even after 2 decades, his brothers still carried guilt and regret over how they had treated him. And that touched Joseph. That moved his heart toward his brothers. He wept. Then he returned to them again and talked with them. And he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. And why he took Simeon, we're not sure. From the incident back in chapter 34, you remember the story of Shechem? And how Simeon suggested that, you know, the men of Shechem be circumcised, and while they were moaning and groaning and trying to recover from their surgery, they went in and killed them all and took revenge over raping their sister and all. That whole messy affair. I mean, Simeon was the ringleader. Simeon apparently was a violent man. I think it's possible that Simeon was the ringleader in the plot to get rid of Joseph, and perhaps that's why Joseph picked Simeon to stay behind. Then Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, to restore every man's money to his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. Thus he did for them. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. And I love Joseph's generosity. You know, he's basically telling his brothers that they can't buy his blessing. His favor, his forgiveness is not for sale. It's a free gift. And you know, so it is with God's favor. You can't buy God's blessing. Whatever you try to give to God, he just puts back in your sack, along with all the grain he gives you and all the blessings he pours out upon you. Grace fills your sack, and it gives you back what you paid. God's favor is a free gift. But notice the brother's reaction to grace. As one of them opened his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, he saw his money, and there it was in the mouth of his sack. And so he said to his brothers, my money has been restored, and there it is in my sack. Then their hearts, rather than rejoice, then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? He was worried that it was that they were going to be accused of having stolen it. You know, this is the same reaction that the Jews today have toward God's grace. This is the same reaction that many of our friends have toward God's grace. They don't understand it. It scares them. How can God be so generous? How can God be so kind? And how can God, you know, give us so many blessings and put our money back in our sack? It scares people. There's got to be a catch. You know, God's blessing has to be earned. That's so many people's approach, you know. You know, they have the E.F. Hutton version of salvation. You got to earn it. They just can't believe it's a free gift. Verse 29. Then the brothers went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, and told him all that had happened to them, saying, "The man who is lord of the land spoke roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, 'We are honest men. We are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan.' Then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, 'By this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me. Take food for the famine of your households and be gone. And bring your youngest brother to me, so I shall know that you are not spies, but that you are honest men. I will grant your brother to you, and you may trade in the land.'" And as they're talking, they're starting to unpack their bags and all. And then it happened, as they emptied their sacks, that surprisingly, each man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. Again, they just can't get over this. Grace. They suspect a setup. They think they're going to be accused of theft. Apparently, the idea that this Egyptian just wanted to love them, just wanted to bless them, that never crossed their mind. That never even computed. That would just be too good to be true. I hope you don't have that attitude toward God and God's love for you. I hope you're enjoying God's grace tonight. I hope you're not trying to earn it or deserve it. I hope you've just received it and you're thankful for it. Hey, there's nothing we can do to merit the goodness that God has shown toward us. We can only just receive grace gracefully. That's about all we can do. Verse 36. And Jacob, their father, said to them, "You have bereaved me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you want to take Benjamin? All these things are against me." Jacob didn't share Joseph's belief in God's providence, did he? Here's what Jacob sung. "No one loves me, this I know, for my misfortunes tell me so." But with just a little faith, just a little confidence in God's promises, he could have changed the words, "Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so." Sometimes we're singing one of those two songs, aren't we? He bemoans all that has happened. "All these things are against me." But these things weren't against him. God was working for him to reunite him with Joseph, to preserve him through this famine. All these things were working together for good. Guys, when trouble strikes, when circumstances hit, when your plans begin to unravel, trust in God's providence. God is at work behind the scenes, working things out for your good and for his glory. Verse 37. Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, "Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you." But he said, "My son will not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave." That would just be it for me. And it'll take a hungry stomach to change Jacob's mind. And that's what God arranges in chapter 43. Now the famine was severe in the land, and it came to pass when they had eaten up the grain which they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, "Go back, buy us a little food." But Judah spoke to him, saying, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" Now, this is reading between the lines a bit, but you get the impression that nobody in the family is spending any sleepless nights worrying about Simeon, don't you? I mean, there was no hurry to go back for Simeon's sake. He could sit down there and rot for all they cared. But when they got hungry again, we got to do something. Verse 6, and Israel said, why did you deal so wrongly with me as to tell the man whether you had still another brother? No, you should have never mentioned little Ben here. But they said, the man asked us pointedly about ourselves and our family, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? And we told him according to these words. I mean, we could have lied to him. Didn't you hear Pastor Sandy's sermon this morning? Could we possibly have known that he would say, bring your brother down? Then Judah said to Israel, his father, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. In other words, Dad, if you don't send Ben with us, we're all going to die anyway, so what's the difference? I myself will be surety for him. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. For if we had not lingered, surely by now we would have returned this second time. And their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best fruits of the land in your vessels and carry down a present for the man, a little balm and a little honey, spices and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. Butter him up, man. Give him a little honey, some pistachios, some almonds. Boy, I love those little, what do they call, Jordan almonds? The candy-coated almonds? Those are the best. Give him a few Jordan almonds, you know. Butter him up a bit. And notice what he says here. And take double money in your hand. Now think about that for a minute. Take double money in your hand. If each one of the 10 brothers who were returning didn't take one shekel but took double money, took 2 shekels, then how many shekels would that be? 10 times 2 would be 20 shekels. How ironic. Remember that Joseph was sold into slavery for 20 shekels? And take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take your brother also and arise, go back to the man, and may God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may release your older brother and Benjamin, your other brother and Benjamin. If I am bereaved, I am bereaved. If it happens, it happens. Just kind of a totally helpless feeling. Jacob just sort of casts himself on the mercies of God. And I'm sure he didn't realize it at the time. But do you know what? The mercies of God, guys, is really the safest place to be, isn't it? So the men took that present in Benjamin, and they took double money in their hand and arose and went down to Egypt, and they stood before Joseph. Now when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, take these men to my home and slaughter an animal and make ready, for these men will dine with me at noon. We're going to have a feast. Then the man did as Joseph ordered, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house, which would have been a palace, remember? Joseph is second in command in all of Egypt. This would be like a visit to the White House. And I'm sure the brothers are all wondering, why are we getting the royal treatment? Now the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and they said, it is because of the money which was returned in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may seek an occasion against us and fall upon us to take us as slaves with our donkeys. In other words, this trap, he said, is about to swing shut. Verse 19. When they drew near to the steward of Joseph's house, they talked with him at the door of the house and said, oh, sir, we indeed came down the first time to buy food.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, There's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.